Mr. O'Sullivan, Reel 15. Were there any provisions for writing home to your next of kin?
No, we've got one card, which all you could put on it was your home address, then there was captured and all that. And I mean, there was nothing else. If you wrote anything else on, it was scribbled out anyway. And that was all handed in to the Italian authorities. And that, I was just on about Rose and Lockwood. They were in that town. But we was on the really barely chance together, weren't we? I was thinking there was in a different company in the Lincolns to what I was.
Now, you mentioned the story of the Italian commander's dog. Was that something that you had direct experience of? Was that something that?
Well, I ate some of it. I didn't have anything to do with killing it.
Could you just describe that in more detail then?
The Italian commander had a corgi. It probably was a corgi. That's about the size of the dog. He said hair like a hound, a full-legged dog. And the American had told you that. I forget what they call him. He said to me, if you can make your way down to our village tonight, there'll be a surprise for you. Because all the Americans had got together in one sort of tent. And you could go anywhere in the camp, but you could only go back to your own tent to sleep sort of thing. So I went down to him after we'd finished road building, and he said, "Well, it's a bit early. Come back later when it's dark." I said, "Well, what the hell's going on?" He said, "Never mind." And when I got back there, they'd killed the dog, skinned it, gutted it, and was cooking it on an open fire. And we ate with all of them, really. It wasn't cooked, but we ate it. It was on a spit sort of thing, you know. It was, the first bite was burnt, and the next bite it was raw. It was, I think the really big kick we got out on is to think that we'd be able to do it under the noses of the archives.
And was there any kind of comeback on that from the authority? They didn't realise what had happened to them.
And I can't understand in that book. I mean, it was all over camp next day. The colonel, the dogs ringing. But he never mentioned it in his book where he was on Sicily.
That's Gerald Summers. Yeah.
He never mentioned it.
The Falcon.
And I never saw his Falcon there.
Now, were the wounded men, were there any wounded in the camp?
There were no wounded in our camp.
So they'd been separated.
Separate.
And were the wounded on the ship coming over? Apart from the only
people we had done was the them with dysentery.
So they were.
They were brought to the camp, and they were put in a separate area, and they were pure and dysentery. It was starvation and food. In the archives, but they had washing facilities. You know, they had the biggest bathhouse for washing facilities was in the unit where they were, the tent. And as they got better with dysentery, which obviously a lot of them did get better with dysentery, but their only cure was there was no medication for them. It was you have to starve them for a day and feed them the next day.
You've mentioned your forester friends that were with you in the camp. Are there any other characters that stand out from this period?
The American will, you formed yourselves into little cliques. You were to be Reggie Rose, Bill Lockwood, yourself, the Yankee, and Ginger, young Corbin Ginger, but he was a bloke out of the DLIs, and we called him Ginger. We'd both probably know his name, but I mean, we were calling him Ginger. and we had our own little kick. And this American, he was an older man than us, but he had some very entertaining stories to talk about horse racing and his gambling days. I learnt that in America you could bet win and place, or show, or you could have place and show. Win and place was the first two. Place and show was the second and third. Show was third. And you could back it to come, it had to come third to be a winning bet. And he was a card sharp. He taught us how to play with cards. He showed us how to cheat at cards. But I couldn't see the same as him. He could deal a pack of cards. Say he was going to play poker. And he'd deal five hands. And he said, "Now, Reggie, what have you got?" "Oh, dear." He said, "I'll tell you what you've got. You've got two pair." And he knew what he was dealing. And whatever he could tell you who was going to win. He said, "Never play cards with somebody you don't know." And he used to do tricks with cards. You know, entertaining tricks.
Was there gambling in the camp at this stage?
Nothing to gamble with. All you had to do was to make sure when you went to sleep at night, you took your books off and put them out and tied them together around your neck. Because somebody would pinch them and club them.
So that would be the... And who would they sell them to?
The eye ties. Sell them for bread or whatever.
So was there any trade in the camp at this stage?
No trading as such. Not open trading. But there was people who were selling stuff to the eye ties.
And had you... I mean, it was a new camp. Had you established by this point, were there kind of certain prisoners that were trying to, like, put together little kind of trading operations?
There was no trading operations nobody had any cigarettes. The only things you could trade was your uniform. Boots was very... If you could flog a pair of boots, you could get enough bread to last you a week.
So did people do that?
Yeah, but they didn't flog their boots, did they? They flogged somebody else's. And that's why you had to sleep with your boots tied around your neck. And that's, that was the main thing. And it snowed. We had some snow. And when it snowed, we stopped in the tents.
What about, you said all you had was what you could stand up in. What about, like, cooking utensils, mess tins, things like
that? Someone had mess tins, but I didn't. I don't know why I didn't, but I wouldn't have been able to pick them up when I left it when he was captured.
And within this camp, was there any kind of classes, education? Had anybody taken that in hand?
All RCs could go to church. And I mean, there were quite a number of RCs, some of the American RCs, and we could go to church into the little, it was a special hut, and the padre came up from Palermo. The Italians were, well, the majority were Catholic anyway, in Italy, because a lot of the soldiers went to the same. The priest would come up from Palermo and there'd be a mass. Just on a Sunday morning.
Can you remember what this camp was called?
No.
The number of it?
No, I can't think it was at all. I didn't know it had a number.
But it was in Sicily?
It was in Sicily, yeah.
Yeah. Is there anything else about this stage of your experiences that we haven't covered?
No, not really. We had to look after each other, really. And we slept 3-2 a bed. The bed, there was two tier beds, two tier bunks. And there's three of us on a bed.
On each tier?
On each tier, yeah.
Was there any kind of tension, any fights, apart from the business of the Sergeant Majors?
There was a fight with the Sergeant Majors because someone wanted to do more than But they really did as NCOs that they let us down. But you can understand it.
Did they continue to sleep in the tent?
Well, they stopped in the same tent because they couldn't go in any other tent. And they continued to sleep in the same unit. They had a bunk between them. Some of us were in three-tier bunks, some were bunked in twos, depending on how many men were in the tent.
And how big were these tents?
They were quite big tents. There was a 6-foot bunk this side and a 6-foot bunk that side, and there was about a 3-foot gap in the centre of it. And both ends were open.
Were you still troubled by a kind of lice at this stage? Were they still a problem?
No, we weren't. We still had the dysentery trouble.
And what about sunburn? Was that, did that any?
No, I don't think I had anybody to. I didn't get sunburned. Well, I tell you, it was snowing anyway in May. It was quite cold.
And then what happened from that camp? What was the next stage?
The next stage was we marched back into Palermo to the ferry at Messina Straits, is it? I think it is, it was Palermo. We marched down into Palermo and got on a ferry. And on this ferry was also some Italian civilians. They didn't say their ferries for these below, did they? And they took us across to, well, they put a bit of anyway, didn't it? I don't know what place it was. And we were held in a station yard until all of the men had come across on the ferry, and they were just put on trains. And these trains were civilian trains. First of all, they issued us with a tin of meat about as big as a tall small tin of beans. It was a meat. It was a lot like dog meat, what we sell as dog meat now. And some hardtack biscuits. But there was no way we could get the bloody tins out. We had nothing to open the tins with. Anyway, they then trained us on a train which was a proper train, proper carriages. And we had, there were 12 men in a carriage. There was enough room for us to, if somebody slept on the rack, on the luggage racks. And on each train, on each carriage was a guard, a night-eye guard. And we went up to Camp 59, night of Italy. We didn't see any of the, I think it was 59 we went to. But and the only way you could get your tinometer was to go and get the Italian guard to help me with his bayonet. Which we tried to help me, we trapped him in the toilet doorway, is it? There's no way you could get him out. And that's how that's. And then we finished up at the camp.
How long did the journey take?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Did you?
I know we slept on it one night.
Was there any interesting sights and sounds as you travelled?
No, because all the women's things were down. You weren't allowed. You could go. Sneak a look out the window, but that's what the guard was there for, stop you.
There's no contact with any civilians then?
No.
On the train?
There were no civilians on the train at all, there was only the POWs. And the Italian guards.
So you got to this new camp, can you remember where that was?
No.
Can you remember what it was called? What number
it was? I'm nearly sure it was 59.
And what kind of place was that?
Well, it was a bloody big camp. And I remember marching through the gates, and when we marched through, there was a lot of POWs that had been there prior to us, obviously. Anybody from Lincoln? Anybody from, any DLIs here? They were shouting out, anybody they know. And that led me rolling Wallace. Anybody from Scunthorpe? So, and right, I'm going into that camp, he looked after me.
That was Rowley Wallace, who you knew from?
Well, I didn't know him then.
But he was from Scunthorpe.
And then we got split up, and I was, he was an elder POW, being a prisoner of war in Lyme. And
can you remember where he was taken prisoner?
No, I can't.
On what regiment he might have been?
He was a guardian. And then we got into huts, and they were infested with lice. And there was three tier beds, six in a block. And I got to a point where I never got out of bed under a roll call and food. And I was in a poor way.
Why was that?
Because I was that depressed. I was really down in the dumps. And then a fellow called Hugh Kendall came into the next row of beds to me. And he used to get up every morning, go out and get washed, shaved, walk around the field. And I think he'd been there a week or two, and he came to me and he said, "It's time you made yourself bloody move." He said, "It's no good." He said, "It's time you got yourself on the move." He said, "Get up, go get a you could get a shower in that camp. You could go for a shower at any time. Get up, go have a shower." Because all I've been doing, I was laying in bed all day long. I was lousy, because they were infested with fleas and mice. And I never made any attempt to. I used to get out of bed for roll call, which we had to do. And the high time made you come round and count everybody. And then you're three for the day until grub up at dinner time, at 5 o'clock time. There was grub up at. There was the bread cob and a bit of cheese every so often in the morning. And that was between the six blokes on the beds. They was in a little group of them. And I got that bloody lazy that I was got the last cob and the last bit of cheese, because the others would go down at the bottom of the beds and they'd be, "You know, it's your turn to pick first this morning. You'd handle all the bread, all the pieces of bread, and you'd be weighing them and saying, 'Oh, what's the hell of that one?'" Same with the cheese. The cheese was about that thick.
That's about half an inch.
A little bit bigger than that.
And about 4 inches
which,
long.
Means the cheese was always between two, the way that goes. And I just stopped in bloody bed and I got late. And I was got the smallest cob and the worst bit of cheese, but I was just depressed.
What do you think it started then?
I don't know, it just come on me. I was just too really hard to move. Too depressed to move off the bed.
Were there others like you at that stage?
Yeah, yeah.
About what percentage of the prisoners?
Oh, no, percentage, because there was all the different. You see, the people who were being longer had got a routine. They'd got someone who was carving on pieces of soap. They'd had a supply of their cross parcels. So there was tin bashing. There was gambling. There was card games. There was crown and anchor games. Well, the older, I mean, there's a hell of a lot of prisoners in that camp. Well, a lot of them, they've got into a routine. They was all right. And the new ones coming in was depressed. I was definitely depressed.
And how long had some of these men been prisoners that were in this camp then?
No, some of them must have been prisoners from the first encounter in Africa.
So they could have been there since 1940?
Yeah.
And there were Red Cross parcels in this camp.
Yeah.
Were they available to the new prisoners?
Well, you've got one between two every so often.
And how often would that be?
Well, maybe every fortnight.
And you remember your first Red Cross parcel?
Yeah, I can.
Could you describe that and what you felt about it?
The first thing I ate was a tin of cheese. And the biscuits was from Breezy Blackpool. Made by Burton's of Reed to Blackpool. The standard of the food in them parcels was varied quite a lot. Some was, would have clim, powdered milk in. Some would have oats, compressed oats. Some would have tins of tomatoes. They weren't all the same, but they all had biscuits in, cigarettes, chocolate. All that was a standard. And the tin of cheese about that far long and about that deep.
That's about, what's that in measurements?
About 2 inches circular and about an inch deep. And it was a sealed tin, you know. And the biscuits was various from, some were Dumpling Parma, some were from Breezy Blackpool, and the ones from Breezy Blackpool was the least popular, because they were in the same flavour, they had the same taste as Huntley and Palmer's biscuits was better, and their biscuits was, well, there was also some butter in, or butter and margarine in the parcel, and when you'd share the parcel out, if you had oats, you'd make porridge and the two of you would have porridge. If you didn't share the parcel out, you had that cheese and that, you know, you shared it out. The chocolate was, there was two bars of chocolate. There was 50 cigarettes. My cigarettes went to Rolling Wallace and I got his bar of chocolate. Because I didn't smoke and he did. And it didn't matter what the exchange rate was in the camp. Because it varied. After parcels come in, cigarettes value went down, because obviously there's more cigarettes in the camp. So you could maybe buy something, you could maybe buy half a bar of chocolate for two cigarettes. But later on, if somebody had saved his chocolate, you could maybe get 10 cigarettes for his half bar. You know, it fluctuated. People would go gambling on the gambling school was organised by people, by men. And then maybe the three men running a crown and anchor board. And two of them would be watching it, you know, making sure that nobody fiddled them, naturally. And that's how it went on. Card games, you see. Men were playing, that's the first time they played bridge. In this camp there was cards, books, and it was in Italy where it was good weather, and men played cards all the time. Or they played on the crown and anchor tables. There was all sorts of gambling going on. Find a lady, anything.
Did you get involved in any of that?
No.
Because of your early experience?
And I didn't have anything to gamble with anyway, because my cigarettes had already been spoken for by Rowan. Anyway, as I say, I was really depressed. I wouldn't get out of bed. And eventually, Hughie Kendall got me up into a Gilgary shower, and every morning, eventually, I would go for a walk with him. But I didn't care at the time. He had a shower every morning and he got me into the same habit and going for a walk. Because the only place you could walk was round the field. In the centre of the field you could lay down somewhere or anything. But the outside of the field was a track, which had been made by men walking round and round. But that was kept clear for them. And you'd see men, hundreds of men, walking round the field, just walking round and round and round. All the time.
And did you have the tripwire system?
Yes,
in this camp? Yeah. Could you describe that?
Well, the first tripwire was about 9 inches off the floor. And then behind that was the big wire. And beyond that was another big wire. And you couldn't go over the tripwire. The central post was around the camp. There was high above the camp. You couldn't go across the tripwire. If they played football and the ball went over the tip wire. He couldn't fetch the ball until he got permission from the sentries on the... All they had to do was...
Make a hand signal.
Make signal that you want to go over the tip wire to pick a ball that you could do. But otherwise, you didn't go over the tip wire. There was the tip wire and then the path. And then the field itself. It's quite a big field because we play football in it. There was goal posts in the field anyway, which had been made by the field builders themselves. And the pitch was roughly rectangle, the centre circle and the window. But it wasn't rectangle, it was a football pitch, you know, like. But it was, there was no idea where the centre spot was and where the goal area was. And there was nearly all some game of football going on in it. And the ball played on the edge of the football, between the football pitch and the track, the walking track, where the blokes laid in bollock naked, sunbathing. And some of the blokes was as blonde as could be, brown as berries. Every little bit of them.
So you were, you this Huey Crack candle got you out of the depression?
Out, yeah.
Yeah. Who was he and where was he from?
He came from York. And he was an SAS lad. And he was a regular soldier who wanted to join the SAS.
And when where had he been captured?
He got captured in Africa they made a raid on Rommel's headquarters at one time, the desert units in the ASA. And he was captured in one of those raids. He wasn't captured on that particular raid.
But he was one of those.
Those sort of things. They were dropping behind the lines and they... He did tell the line, what it was. But he said it was just... And he was very insistent on... constipation. He said, you must not get constipated. You must eat properly, eat what you've got in the morning, drink plenty of water, and walk and exercise. If you don't get constipated, you'll not get dysentery either. It was a bit of a fatality in that.
Did he have an effect on other people as well in that way, or just you?
Just me. It became my companion. Because I saw a lot of Rowley's. If I wanted to see Rowley, I just went and found him. But Huey Kendall was in the same hut as me. I slept on the second bunk, middle bunk, and he slept on the middle bunk of the row behind me. So my feet was against his head until he eventually returned round, and I put my head against his, and we could lay at night and talk.
So, your friend Wallace Clark, he was
moved eventually.
So you would trade your chocolate and cigarettes, but you wouldn't actually be sharing the...
No, we didn't share anything else, just chocolates and cigarettes.
So that was a deal you had, apart from, mucking in kind of thing, yeah.
And, you see, Rolly had a cousin in there as well. Rolly Duke was his cousin, and they mucked in together.
And who was Wally Dukes?
He came from Messingham, just up the road there.
And what regiment was he?
He was RAMC, Medical, he was a medical corps.
Your friend Kendall was SAS, I mean, so did he or anybody else ever talk of, like, escaping from the place? And
not until the ITAS packed in.
So until, we'll get to that when we get to it, but at this stage, you're in this camp, you're trying to readjust yourself to living in this place. Were there any other kind of characters that stood out that you felt were...
Mr. Jackson.
Who was that?
Well, he was a Jew boy. And he organised a camp concert. And he took a female role.